to bring this meeting to order at 8:05 of House Education Committee. It is Monday, March 3rd. It's 8:05, and President or Representative Book and myself, Chair Seaton. Representative Wilson was ill today. We have several excused folks that are excused from call of the House and aren't going to be here. We are not going to be conducting any business on bills today, but what we're going to do is take public testimony and investigate any questions we have on those bills. We wanted to give the public more opportunity to come forward on both of those issues. So those will be taken up sometime next week. So we will start today with House Bill 347, Leave for Military Spouses, and then we will go to House Bill 350, Public School Funding, and let's see. Did
we haven't heard the Leave for Military Spouses, have
we? I don't even know why we're hearing it here, to tell you the truth. No, we haven't heard this
before. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you. Would you come forward and identify, and this is our first look at this bill, so we'd like you to present the bill for us and introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Petter Torlund. I'm staff for Representative Peterson. First off, I would like to thank the chair and the committee member. The leave that a soldier has from combat zone is sacred. And the time that they are able to spend with their family can, and in some cases, is the last time that they may get. And although this bill, HB 347, is six pages, it's a pretty simple concept. It applies to school districts, state and local governments, private sector employees with more than, or private, sorry, private sector employers with more than 20 employees. And it allows for employees to take 10 days of unpaid leave to spend time with their spouses when they return from combat. And it specifies that they have to return from a combat zone as dictated by the president, those being the Arabian Peninsula areas, including the Persian Gulf, Kosovo, and Afghanistan. And while the Federal Family Medical Leave Act already grants 12 weeks of job-protected leave for military family members in many situations, including R&R, it is restricted to members of the Guard and Reserves and does not cover the regular armed forces. So we saw this inequity and felt that it needed to be corrected.
Okay, thank you. And just for the record, I wanted to welcome Representative Peterson to our, he's the sponsor of the legislation, and appreciate you coming. And if you're comfortable with your staff proceeding, or if you want to offer a few words.
It's fine.
And just since there's two male voices, if we're going back and forth with answering questions, if we change people, just make sure you just state your name. You don't have to state staff for.
Okay. Thank you. So this is better.
Thank you.
We did hear that there is some opposition to this bill and that it may place undue hardship to the employers, and have a couple of amendments for consideration if the committee wishes to hear them at some point in time in the future that may assist with the employers. Also would like to note that there are 10 other states that have enacted similar legislation, and the bill has a zero fiscal note for the state. And I do believe we should have a couple of individuals online to testify. And then, as you know, Nikki Neal from the Division of Personnel is here to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. And so this is for military spouses on leave, 20 or fewer. And I would like to just get the subject of the amendments on the table. We're not going to offer the amendments, but I'd just like to find out the subject of those two amendments, so that when people are testifying, they will know what's potential before the committee. Would you let us know what those subject matters are?
Yeah. The first and third amendments are actually both of the same area. They're just different wording. so that it's easier to like look at two different versions of it, that would require 48 hours advance notice. And then that would be the first one. The third one would require 48 hours advance notice unless it's impracticable to do so. And then the second amendment is to assist those smaller school districts in the state, those with 20 or to give them the same provision that we have for the employers of private practice or private business, so that if they have 20 or fewer employees, they are exempt from this bill.
Okay, and thank you. And those were concerns that were just raised in general discussions that without some notice provision, many districts wouldn't be able to find substitutes, and that normally this is something that it can be seen ahead of time. You'll know that a spouse is coming in from a from a deployment, and therefore it should be scheduled ahead of time and give them maximum flexibility. And the other one was that as the bill is currently teachers, there was no minimum size, so even if there were only three teachers in the school, this would kick in and there might not be a availability of substitutes at all in those circumstances. So I appreciate you looking at those concerns that I've raised, and we won't be offering amendments today, but those are the subjects that have already come up as far as possible changes. Representative Book, do you have questions on this bill for
I
the...
I was hoping to hear from somebody online.
Okay, thank you. Representative Peterson, did you have anything further to offer on the bill?
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'll put myself on the record. I'm Representative Pete Peterson. I represent District 19, which is the northeast part of Anchorage, known as Muldoon. And I just think that this is a bill that has been passed in some other states and seems to have been when the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act was passed. It talked about guards and reserve members, but it didn't include the active military, and we have a lot of active military here in the state of Alaska, and so we thought it would be important to sort of try to fill in that gap, and that's what this legislation would do.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Let's go to the testimony on 347, and we have Jeff Mittman. Jeff Mittman, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chair.
I guess it's Jeffrey, sorry. Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and proceed with your testimony? And just so you know, I believe we have a communication from you in our packet.
Certainly, thank you. I thank the chair for the opportunity to submit the oral written testimony. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the executive director of the ACLU of Alaska. The ACLU of Alaska supports House Bill 347 and requests that the committee to achieve full support consider a minor amendment to it. We have spoken with the bill sponsor in the Senate and House sides and hope that we can arrange for this amendment to take place. Under the terms of the Alaska Civil Liberties Union versus a state lawsuit, the Alaska Supreme Court determined that as there was a constitutional amendment which restricted same-sex couples from marrying in the state of Alaska, that under the Alaska Constitution, it was important that the state recognize and grant equal employment benefits to same-sex couples as it did to legally married spouses. Based on the terms of this Alaska Supreme Court decision, we believe it's incumbent upon the legislature in passing House Bill 347 to include in it same-sex partners. As a former United States Army infantryman, I'm very pleased that the House is considering this bill. I think it recognizes the reality of military families and that leave is a very important part of a military service member's service. One issue, however, is that without including same-sex partners in the bill, what would happen is those service members who have a same-sex partner would come home on leave and could face a situation where the very purpose of this bill would be not be enacted. Because, for example, an employer would say, well, you're not covered under this bill. And while they have the legal right to be covered, instead of being able to enjoy their leave time with their family, they'd instead be faced with the opportunity, the responsibility of obtaining legal counsel, of writing legal papers, of threatening lawsuits. So instead of having the opportunity to enjoy their family time, to enjoy some R&R and prepare for their deployment, to be ready for service, they'd be faced with a unpleasant situation that would detract from their service and detract from their leave. We think it's a very simple amendment. It does not expand anything that's intended by the bill. It simply fully enacts what is the purpose of the bill. On that basis, as it already has been determined, it's necessary under the Alaska Constitution. We'd ask that the committee include this amendment in the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Book, do you have a note? I had a question. Of course, we don't enforce U.S. law, but my understanding that the current state in the military is that it's a don't ask, don't tell policy. So wouldn't the application for this benefit actually put a person in the military at risk in their current situation as a military policy is currently envisioned?
Through the chair, I thank Representative Book for the question. As a first matter, as we all know, Congress and the military are currently looking at the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, and it's certainly conceivable that within the near-term future that policy will be overturned. As I know the representative committee is aware, in many militaries around the world, same-sex individuals and same-sex partnerships serve with distinction in a vast majority of militaries and certainly all our NATO partners. So at that time, that would not be an issue. Currently, though, even under the current policy, as this legislation applies to the civilian member, it would not have an impact on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. For example, if a teacher in the Anchorage school system had a partner who was in the Air Force and she knew her partner was coming home, she would go to her school principal or her Anchorage Municipal School District leave individual and state, my partner is going to be home on leave. I'd like to request 10 days without leave. At that point, it'd be up to the school district to, if it wanted to, request documentation or any sort of information regarding the domestic partnership, who leave orders, anything that the school district wanted. The only way this would violate Don't Ask, Don't Tell is if the school district, for some reason, felt it incumbent to take a further step to then reach out affirmatively and contact the military and say, we want you to know that we have an employee whose domestic partner is in the military. We don't anticipate that any but the most negative or unpatriotic employees would take that step. So it would not impact Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you for your testimony today. I don't see any other questions. Dan Davidge, and I'm probably mistaken your name, but Dan, are you?
This is Rick Davidge.
Okay, I guess we have a misprint here. It's Rick, R-I-C, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. My sheet was wrong here. And to let you know before you start your testimony, we do have a one-page written testimony from you in our packet as well. But would you go ahead with your name and who you represent for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rick Davidge. I'm the chairman of the Alaska Veterans Foundation. I'm the state council president for Vietnam Veterans of America in Alaska. I'm the chairman of the Municipal Commission on Military and Veterans Affairs for the municipality of Anchorage, and also chairman of VetPAC. One of the things that we've heard over the last couple of years as we have been involved in this conflict is this sense from communities that we don't really feel like we're making a sacrifice in this war. What can I do to help? What can we do to help? What can we do to engage in this conflict? In working with the Senate sponsor and now the House sponsor, I would just suggest to you that often, and we just had this happen last night, men and women return home from combat, men and women are suddenly given R&R, or men and women are suddenly wounded in combat, and there's no notice of those things. So we're a little concerned about the 48-hour notice. We understand the intent of that. We understand the concern with respect to that. But as an employer, if I had a man or woman come to me and say, my husband or wife are coming home, my significant other is coming home, or and this has happened already a number of times, they've been given R&R, but they can't come home, can I go visit with them? And the boss says, well, I really don't think so. Your job is just too important. How do we support our troops? You know, a lot of people give a lot of political speeches. We name highways after veterans. We put ribbons on trees. We put stickers on our car. But that's not how we need to support our troops. This is a way the state of Alaska can say we're going to enable these families who serve together, because wives and husbands serve together no matter where they're deployed, and the children of those families serve together, to enable them to be together at very critical points in this journey they're on in defense of America. And I would ask the committee, certainly be willing to help with the staff on any consideration of amendments, and certainly support the amendment that was just mentioned by Jeffrey, to move this bill quickly and get it passed this session. Thank you.
So do I understand from you, Rick, that you would support the notice, but with the conditional on as circumstances allowed, or whatever the wording will be, so that there's a provision so that doesn't automatically apply in all circumstances? I mean, we have a lot of troops that know they're coming home and they're rotating back from deployment. And as I understand it, those situations would be covered under this bill, and these emergency medical situations would also be covered. So,
yes, Mr. Chairman, I would support that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Booth, do you have any questions for Testaware?
Not for the speaker. No,
okay.
For the
thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. David. Dan Wayne?
Yes. Representative Seaton, I'm online. I don't have anything to add unless there's a specific question.
Okay, I didn't have it down for questions, so thank you. And Stacy Bannerman, are you online?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Certainly. Thank you, and thanks to the committee. My name is Stacy Bannerman. I'm an Army National Guard Blue Star wife. My husband has served two combat tours in Iraq and has received a Bronze Star and Combat Infantry Badge for his service. I am the author of When the War Came Home, The Inside Story of Reservists and the Families They Leave Behind. I'm the founder and director of Sanctuary Weekends for Women Veterans and Camp Howdy for Military Kids. I've also received the Patriotic Employer Award from the National Guard Commission for the employer support of the Guard and Reserve. Again, thank you to the committee for considering this extremely important bill to support the families of the troops who are serving or will serve in combat deployments. In a few short months, another 30,000 troops will be deploying to Afghanistan again. The majority of those troops are married with children. Most of the spouses left behind work outside the home. Many of us have to choose between work and family when our loved one deploys. It's an impossible choice, and one that military families should never be asked to make when America is at war. My husband is a sergeant first class with the Army National Guard. His brigade spent several months training at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, more than 1,000 miles away from home and family prior to shipping out for a second tour in Iraq. I had recently moved to accept a new position in order to implement programs to help military families and veterans. I'd been on the job for just a few months, so I didn't have any sick leave or vacation time available. It would be more than 1 year before I saw my husband again. If we support the troops, and by extension, military families, and passing a military family leave to provide 10 days of unpaid leave per deployment for immediate family members, active duty, guard, and reserve should be at the top of this country's to-do list. Because when a soldier goes to war, so does the family. And when a veteran comes home, family support is the single most critical factor in successful reintegration. And the fact of the matter is the demographics of the 21st century military are very different from the past. And adapting to those realities must, by definition, include expanding support for military families. For the first years of the Vietnam War, married men were exempt from the draft, and for the duration of the war, married men with children were given deferments so that they wouldn't be deployed, as it would constitute too much of a hardship on the families. During Vietnam, the majority, not all, but the majority of troops were single soldiers in their late teens or early 20s serving one tour, and comparatively few citizen soldiers served in combat. Today, the bulk of the boots on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan are married. They have served or are serving multiple tours. Most of them are children. Around 40% are citizen soldiers.
Thank you, Stacy. I had a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. In your testimony, you were talking about pre-deployment leave. Is that correct? And as I understand the bill before us, if it's when a person is on leave directly from a combat zone, was your testimony that you understand the bill differently, or that you want to see
because
a change?
I've been able to get Military Family Leave Act passed here in the state of Oregon, and I also was able to secure sponsorship from Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon and Congressman Adam Smith, the subcommittee chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, to introduce leave. I mean, there are variations of this bill or this legislation in different states, and so I'm speaking from that experience. And the way that it has been languaged, and I have not seen the entirety of the Alaska version, but the way that it has been languaged is to provide up to 10 days of unpaid leave per Title 10 status for the family member to be able to utilize at their discretion, whether it means having those last few days before they ship out, some time when they're, if they get 2 week R&R at home, and or time afterwards, and or in case of injury.
Okay, thank you. And the sponsor can address those items because I think that's a little differently than the bill that we have. But appreciate your testimony. Representative Book, did you have any questions?
No. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling in your testimony, Ms. Bannerman. Appreciate that.
All right, certainly. Thank you. And thank you for considering this bill.
Do we have anyone else online to testify on House Bill 347? No. Do we have anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 347? We have a member of the Personnel Board? No.
Division of Personnel.
The Division of Personnel. Do you have any questions for the Department, Administration, Division of Personnel?
No.
No. Okay, I don't at this time either. Thank you. So we will close public testimony at this time, and we will reopen it at our next hearing.
I do have a couple questions for
sure.
The
sponsor. Representative Book.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Peterson, what is currently allowed for teachers in the state of Alaska as far as leave is concerned, unpaid?
Representative Book, through the chair, I believe that they are allowed to take 5 days off currently. Mm-hmm. But it would probably depend on whether they're able to get a substitute. In certain situations, depending on what subject they teach, substitutes that are qualified, certified, are difficult to get. But most of the time, I understand that they are allowed to have 5 days off.
Through the
Reverend Book.
Thank you. The intent of this bill, is it to pattern Alaska off of other states that have passed this legislation? I'm just curious as to where we were, going with this bill.
Representative Book, through the chair, this bill is not identical to the bill that passed in some other states, but it is patterned after them.
Okay.
There was one difference that was just brought up, that this bill does not allow leave before the military member leaves to go on a combat mission. Usually, according to the bill drafter, they know in advance, well in advance, when they're going to be leaving, and so their families are usually able to make an arrangement to get some time off with their active military member before they deploy.
I see. Fine.
Reverend Book, sure.
Thank you. So how did this bill, how did you become the sponsor of this bill, Representative?
Well, I'm a member of the Joint Armed Services Committee, and I heard that there was similar legislation that had been passed in other states. My district happens to have two military bases right outside within a mile of my district, and so I have a lot of active and reserve and retired military that live in East Anchorage. And so I thought it was an important bill that my constituents would appreciate.
Thank you. Reverend Book?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And since we've had very interesting conversation on legislative intent with, lawyers and representatives of the Supreme Court, as an informational meeting with the Education Committee, I wanted to ask you, because there was quite a difference between pattern legislation or whether you're copying some portions of that legislation for Alaska legislation, because if your intent is not here, or is your intent to have any law, judicial findings or judicial cases that have revolved around that in other jurisdictions carry to this jurisdiction, or are you using this language that you have in this bill that will then be judged independently under Alaska law?
Mr. Chair, the drafter has tried to adapt this bill to the state of Alaska and to our statutes, and I think that's why it's a little bit different than what some of the other states have passed. And we are, this is a work in progress, as you know, so we're willing to make additional changes to this bill as issues come up and we discuss it with committee members.
Okay, and thank you. And I just have really become aware of this since our informational meeting, and that we want to make sure that if our intention is to have an Alaska law that does not bring the weight of court cases in other jurisdictions, that we have to make sure that we're offering this as an Alaska law and not as a copy, as a pattern of that we're bringing those legal cases with us. So I'm hearing that that's not your intent. Your intent is to have, although we have some similar language, it's going to be interpreted with Alaska Constitution and Alaska law, not bringing those other cases from other jurisdictions.
That's correct. This is unique to the other laws. I haven't looked at all of them, but I think we are a little different.
Thank you. And Representative Book, do you have anything further on this bill?
No, I appreciate that. If I might, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman.
Representative Book.
I appreciate the sponsor coming forward with this piece of legislation and working within the confines of, the state of Alaska. I hope to hope for success in this bill. So thanks very much.
And I'd just like to state that we do have one other letter of support. And that was from the Vietnam Veterans of America, Alaska State Council, and we have a letter of opposition from the National Federation of Independent Businesses Alaska. So We have those in our packet as well as the other written statements. So we'll put this bill aside, and thank you, Representative Peterson, for bringing the bill forward, and we'll let you know when we'll take it up again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate your time and interest this morning.
And at that time, when we take it up, I will reopen public testimony on the bill for additional public comment.
Thank you.
Now we have House Bill 350. House Bill 350 is public school funding, local contributions, local effort. And so let's, we have Dave Jones, Assistant Superintendent in Soldotna online. Dave, are you there?
I am. My name is Dave Jones. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you today on House Bill 350. The 2001 change in property valuation has created a disparity in local mill levy equivalents and has also created a serious equity issue among districts. House Bill 350 would resolve the equity issue and would put all the districts and taxpayers back on even ground. I think people are aware that the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District has historically been funded to the cap. With the state funding increases that have occurred over the last few years, the local cap has increased significantly, and the local support amount provided by borough taxpayers has increased significantly as well. House Bill 350 would, in effect, lower the cap and provide local taxpayer relief, and it would do that without a revenue loss to the school district. The Kenai Peninsula Borough School Board met on Monday night. We discussed this bill, and the school board on the Kenai is in strong favor of House Bill 350 and would like to see this bill moved forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I don't think we have anything in writing to accompany the bill.
I'll forward that to you today, as soon as I get back from the LIO.
Great, thank you very much. Representative Book, do you have any questions for the superintendent of Kenai Peninsula Borough?
No.
On this bill?
Nope.
Thanks, Mr. Jones. Let's see. Let me just make sure that we didn't have anything further. Nope, that's it. So thank you for your testimony. And next we have George Troxel. Mr. Troxel, are you online?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Would you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony? And by the way, we do have a one-page written testimony from you.
Thank you. My name is George Troxel, and I'm superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District. Thank you for taking my testimony this morning. House Bill 350 reduces the revenue available to the Mat-Su School District without increasing local taxes, and furthermore, that impact is exponential over the coming years. I don't support House Bill 350 for that reason. The Mat-Su School District is experiencing financial hardships due to the general nature of expenses rising faster than revenues in these times. Given this scenario, the Mat-Su and I believe two other districts in the state are singled out by House Bill 350 to get a double whammy in the arena of revenue shortfalls. The Mat-Su School District has a growing enrollment, over 800 students in the last 3 years. The district did realize revenue enhancements generated by this growth. Revenue increases received because of the increased enrollment take care of day-to-day expenses, but not the expenses of more general support and infrastructure such as buildings, grounds, furnishings, and equipment. In the past 10 years, as many new schools have been opened in the Valley, the opening of new schools has tremendous impact on the annual budget. In the Mat-Su, we plan approximately $1 million of the usual annual operating cost for the first year of schools open. Growth in the Valley is a good thing for the state of Alaska, but growth has its costs. And while the Valley appreciates the state's support in handling this growth, that help is also an expectation for which the state as a whole realizes dividends. New schools are needed in the Valley. These new schools will further stress the property owner's capacity to keep up with increasing demand for more tax dollars to build these schools. The district currently uses 61 portable buildings for classrooms. These house close to 2,000 student full-time equivalents. Bonds will need to be passed in the near future that will rely on subsequent tax increases to construct these needed schools. House Bill 350 ultimately puts the askance for more dollars from property owners in the MATSU. The Valley is not a home to major or great amounts of industry. Many of our taxpayers are those who can least afford more and more property tax increases. Median incomes for most who work in the Valley are on the low end of the scale. Multiply that by the fact that a sizable percentage of gross property value in the Valley is not a result of newly developed property resulting from growth, but rising property tax assessments on existing property. When higher tax assessments come about because of increased value of a property, the long-term property owners become victims. Just because a property's value increases, it does not follow that the property owner's ability to pay more in taxes increases. All of us are in dire budgetary circumstances with more and more challenges. This is not the time to change formulas for funding where anyone loses while others experience substantial gains. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Troxell, can you further explain your statement there that House Bill 350 reduces revenue available to the MATSU School District without increasing local taxes? Can you explain to me how that does it? I mean, the intention of the bill is to have the mill rate set at the lowest mill rate that's currently assessed throughout the entire state for everyone, and so there was an attempt to make sure that no one would see an increase in mill rate. So I'm trying to quite understand that statement.
Hey, thank you for the question. As I understand the bill, it changes the base year from 1999 to more current times, I think a year in the past. And so the property values in 1999 borough-wide were substantially less than they are, say, a year ago. And so that 2.7 mills, while the mills remain constant, the dollar amounts associated with those mills is greatly increased. And that would come from the local taxpayer. Without the revenue coming from the state because of that change in the formula, if we were to maintain funding, then especially as we go out in future years, then those dollars would have to be provided by our local taxpayers.
So if I might just follow up, just so that we're all clear, you're talking about the future valuation of property at 50% of value is your concern, the mill rate, everybody paying 3.7, or everybody across the state, all municipalities having the same mill rate required for local contributions, so we don't have this situation where we have some municipalities being charged at 4 mills and others at 2.7 mills on their valuation. That's not the problem that you have with the bill. Is that correct?
It is a good question. In my mind, it's kind of a complex web of things that I'm sorting through. I'm not opposed to the increases in the other school districts at all, or reducing that. But so the 2.7, I'm not at all opposed to that. It's the shifting of that base year, especially in these times where everyone's experiencing economic hardship, that the that base year has changed, and with to a more recent year where property values are more, therefore the amount that would be a required local but to maintain the level of service we have, the local contribution would have to increase substantially.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood the testimony so that it's not on the mill rate change, it's so that everybody's equal. It's on the portion where instead of having a fixed base year where everything, any growth from that point all into the future is only taxed at 50% valuation and have a rolling year, so it's looking back 1 year, and so just the increase from the 2 years ago to 1 year ago, that increase is taxed at 50%. That is your objection to the bill.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. And it's that section four that kind of centers on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just wanted to get that clear. Representative Booth. Did you have a question for Mr. Troxell?
No, I appreciate his testimony. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Troxell, for your testimony today. Do we have anyone else online?
Yes, we do. Excuse me, this is George Troxell again. Colleen Vaig, president of our school board, is here, too, and would like to testify.
Okay, and if she could also spell her name, because we don't have it here at the LI, we don't have it on the sheet, so... If you would introduce yourself and spell your name and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony. Appreciate it.
I'd be happy to do that. My name is Colleen Vaig. That's Colleen with two L's and two E's. Last name is Vaig. It's V like Victor, A-G-U-E. I'm the president of the Massu District School Board.
Thank you. Would you proceed with your testimony?
Certainly, and I have sent a copy of this to Representative Keller, whom I believe is on the House Education Committee as well. But just to piggyback on what Mr. Troxell and last week what Mr. Merle Thompson said to you, in the past 10 years, we have actually built 8 new schools to accommodate our increasing growth in our population, our school population. Each one of those 8 schools had to go to a homeowner for bond, which... you know, might not be a state tax increase, but it is certainly an increase to the mortgages paid to our homeowners. Of those, 3 of the elementary schools that we built are already at or over capacity. One of them is at 90% capacity, and that's the school that just opened this year, the 2009-10 school year. One is at 75% capacity, and that's one that was built 3 years ago. Our Career Tech High School, which was built 4 years ago, is at capacity. And we have Teeland Middle School, which is over capacity. So we already are short of space. As Mr. Troxell has stated, we have 2,000 students in 61 portables. So what we are currently short in our buildings to house, to adequately house and educate our students, is one large high school, one middle school, and 2 elementary schools. That's what we are currently teaching out of portables, which are not optimum education facilities, as we all know. So today, we're 5 schools behind. We need to bond already. In 5 years, when all of these schools will probably be bonded, if it's approved and built, we'll be further behind at our current growth rate. We only had 180 student increase last year, and I say only because that's the lowest increase in student rate that we have had in the past 10 years. What that means is, in our schools that, as you have already told you, that are already at or over capacity, we can't just put students in school classrooms. We need to build more classrooms, which means we need to hire more teachers. More floor space for the new schools also means increased custodial work, increased additional support staff, all of those things that we are currently already behind the eight ball in as far as our education. The SBAs, of course, are going to go up, and we appreciate that. But that isn't going to cover the new floor space and buildings that we need to cover. And currently, in today's economy, the bonding is something that we're experiencing a certain amount of bond fatigue out here because we have bonded so many times in the past 10 years. Our population has gone from 1999 until today, from 12,699 students to 16,673 students. That has put an enormous strain on our school district and on our taxpayers and home mortgage owners. So We're just asking, and again, I want to reiterate what Merle Thompson and what Mr. Troxell have stated. We're not against this whole bill. We understand with the economy the way it is, with decreasing enrollment, that other school districts are suffering economically as well. We're opposed to the tax base in Section 4, as has been stated previous. And I just really thank you and appreciate your time on this matter.
Okay, thank you. And Colleen, we do not have yours in writing. If you wouldn't mind sending it to me, and then we can distribute it to the committee.
I would certainly be willing to do that.
So we can have it in our packet. Representative Book, do you have any questions?
No, not at this time. Well,
thank you very much for Colleen, we appreciate that. And we'll look forward to getting your written testimony as well. Is there anyone else online? Is there anyone else here in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 350? Seeing none, we will put House Bill 350 aside. We'll take it up do I see somebody that wants to testify, or were you just? No, okay. We'll put 350 aside and take it up a later date. Representative Booth, do you have any questions on any other items for today?
No, not today. I appreciate all those people that bore with us today and in lieu of our sort of abbreviated committee. I appreciate you allowing these people to come forward. Thanks.
Well, thank you, and I think it's important to get testimony coming forward on the bills and give people an opportunity to raise those issues so that the committee as well as other members of the public can make their testimony to us in light of issues that are raised on the bills. We also have House Bill 397, the 297, the Governor's Performance Scholarship that we've been working on. We will have, we are having a work draft to incorporate the amendments that we had, and those will be posted on, that will be posted as a work draft on our website as soon as we receive it, so that members and the public can go to that and get that as well. And if we don't have anything else, we will be adjourned today, and I'm sure that other members of the committee that are traveling will catch up on the testimony, and we'll make sure that they get all written testimony received on these bills today. So thank you very much, and we'll be adjourned at 10 till 9.